As a deep ocean geologist, Trout knew exactly what Frobisher was talking about. You're talking about actual movement of the crust over the inner core rather than a change in the Earth's electromagnetic field. Precisely. The solid part of the Earth moves over the liquid part. There's evidence that it has happened before, caused by a natural event like a passing comet. I'm a deep ocean geologist, Trout said. A comet is one thing. I find it hard to envision that man-made machinations could cause major physical changes. This is why the work of Kovacs was so important. Look, electromagnetism runs the whole universe. The Earth is charged up like a huge electromagnet. Changes in the field can cause a shift in polarity, as we discussed a few minutes ago. But there's another effect, which Kovacs homed in on in his research. Matter oscillates between the stages of matter and energy. Trout nodded in understanding. What you're saying is that by changing the electromagnetic field of the planet, it is possible to change the location of matter on the Earth's surface. What would happen with a land shift? Gamay said. Frobisher's smile vanished. The forces of inertia would react to the shift of matter. The waters in the world's oceans and lakes would be jerked in a different direction, pounding the coastline, causing massive floods. All electrical devices would fail. We'd have hurricanes and tornadoes of unheard-of force. The Earth's crust would break open, causing huge earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and massive lava flows. Climate changes would be drastic and long-lived. Radiation sickness from solar rays penetrating the Earth's magnetic field would kill millions. You're talking a catastrophe of major proportions, Gamay said. No, Frobisher said, his voice almost a whisper. I'm talking about nothing less than the end of all living matter. The end of the world. Austin hauled his 21-foot-long Moss racing skull from under the boathouse and eased it down the ramp to the water's edge. He slipped into the open cockpit, tucked his feet under the clogs bolted to the footrests, pushed his sliding seat back and forth a few times to limber up his abdominal muscles, and adjusted the outrigger oarlocks for maximum efficiency. Then he pushed off into the river, dipped his Concept 2 composite oars into the water, leaned forward and pulled the handles back using the weight of his body. Rowing was a daily ritual and his main form of exercise. It emphasized technique over power, and the melding of mind and body necessary to send the light craft skimming over the water was a way to exclude the chatter of the outside world and to bring his concentration into sharp focus. Austin saw movement out of the corner of his eye, cutting his meditation short. Another skull was pulling alongside his. Austin shipped his oars and coasted to a stop. The other rower did the same. They stared at each other. His newfound companion didn't fit the mold of the clean-cut athletic types he often encountered on his morning rows. To begin with, long Rastafarian dreadlocks hung down from under the tan baseball cap. He wore sunglasses with blue lenses. "Good morning," Austin said. The man removed his cap with the attached dreadlocks and took his sunglasses off. "Damn, this thing is hot," he said. He grinned at Austin. "Been to any good kayak races lately?" The sun gleamed off the bizarre tattoo on the sweaty scalp. Austin leaned on his oars. "Hello, Spider. Why the need to go incognito?" Barrett pointed to a bandage that was wrapped around his head. "Someone is trying to kill me." "Why?" "Long story, Kurt." Austin decided to take a stab in the dark. "Does this have anything to do with extra low-level electromagnetic transmissions?" It was obvious from the look of astonishment on Barrett's face that the comment had struck home. "How'd you know about that?" "That's about all I do know." Barrett squinted at the sparkle on the river. "Pretty." "I think so. But you didn't come here for the scenery." "You're right. I came by because I need a friend."